This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-952-7870. And our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. We're going to talk a lot of basketball today, especially during the first 15 minutes. We're going to talk with Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News and also from the Big Ten Network and talk about the early entrants. As you know, a lot of guys are declaring. You'll hear more about many of the players who are declaring from Kentucky. They're going to be declaring today. So let's check in and talk with Mike DeCourcy on all the early entrants. Hey, Mike, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great, Earl. How are you?
Hey, okay. You know, I called you today and wanted to talk a little bit about these early entrants. And the thing that makes me wonder is, you know, do some of them enter so early just because they haven't been exposed yet? Because, you know, a lot of people and fans don't know how good or what their deficiencies are. And is that this one way for them to, you know, yes, they do some things very well, but they have some deficiencies too, as all players do. Do you think sometimes they try to do this to cover up some of those deficiencies?
I think some maybe enter with that in mind, but it's the worst. In the end, it never works for either side. When somebody goes with the idea that they're going to get out there before they get exposed, well, for one, if you're a scout and you can't sniff that out, you should be fired tomorrow. As a matter of fact, you should be fired today. I mean, you should be able to tell. Look, I mean, Earl, I'm not going to brag here. I can look at a player once and know what he has. I don't have to watch him 100 times. I can look at a player once and know what he has. I mean, I may not know all his competitive drive and that sort of stuff, but I can look at him once and see what his game looks like, what kind of athlete he is. You know, whether or not he tends to hustle for the most part, whether or not he can handle it. I think you can do that. I mean, I remember going all the way back to my days watching the Dapper Dan high school game in Pittsburgh when I was just a college kid or a high school kid, and seeing guys and being kind of able to pick out the ones who could play. And I just think that's what a scout should be able to do. So, and again, I've never been a professional scout, but I've always been able to sort of figure out which ones look like players. And if you can't figure that out after a full college season, then you shouldn't have the job. And if you think you're going to go out and trick certain, maybe you can trick some of the dumb guys, but the smart guys, the ones who are way smarter than me, and I'm not bad at it, they should be able to figure it out in, you know, who the guys that are conning them are with no trouble at all.
Yes, that sounds very reasonable. But as you know, a lot of these guys, they don't, you know, they say they all want to be NBA players, of course. And, right. And we know a lot of them, they do leave early. I mean, they leave before they're ready. And that's going to be probably a continuing problem, won't it?
Well, I think it is as long as we have the age limit at 19. I think you see a lot of players leave before they're ready. And I always classify it into early entry and premature early entry is how I do it. When Anthony Davis goes to the NBA, that's not a problem. It'd be nice if he was there for a second year because he could get a little stronger and leave it a little more dominant, but it's not really a problem. It's not a problem when Kevin Durant leaves early for the NBA, et cetera. But when a player leaves after a year like Daniel Orton or B.J. Mullins from Ohio State or Costa Kufos, they become sort of flotsam in the NBA. They become these guys that just sort of exist, and maybe they keep a job on the roster. And look, it's not a bad-paying job, but what happens is the game gets cheapened. The NBA is not supposed to be a minor league. 15 years ago when Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and those guys played, or 20 years ago, it wasn't a minor league then. Everybody who was in the league was there for a reason. And it wasn't because, well, we kind of drafted this guy and maybe he'll turn into something. It's not supposed to be for that. It's supposed to be for the absolute best players in the world. And Daniel Orton right now is not one of the best players in the world. Well, however many guys are in the NBA, 15 times 30, whatever that adds up to, and I apologize for not knowing off the top of my head, he's not one of those players. but he's in the league because someone drafted him because he's tall, and they thought that, well, he's tall and has reasonable hands, so maybe he can turn into a player. The NBA is not supposed to be for that guy.
Yes, we see so much of that these days, Mike. So many guys get drafted on their potential, on their how good they think they can be. I mean, I hear that so much, it drives me crazy. Boy, this player, when he gets good, this is how good he's going to be. You probably heard those same kind of things from players all the time, or about players quite a bit.
Right, and Earl, how many have you seen turn into players? How many?
Very few.
That were drafted at that level that had, you know, I looked at, for instance, a couple of weeks ago, I started looking at big guys because, using Andre Drummond as the example. Andre Drummond from Connecticut averaged 10 points and 7 rebounds as a college freshman. Struggled much more as a college freshman than had been anticipated, because if you look at him physically, again, he moves great. He is really strong. He has great hands. And you say to yourself, well, there's a player in there. And if he were given the proper time to become a player, I have no doubt in my mind that he would be. But because UConn's not going to be able to go to the tournament next year, and a lot of his teammates are abandoning ship, and the idea of coming back, you'd only be coming back to get better. And that's a hard sell now, especially when you can't even come back for the glory of making a run in the NCAAs and that sort of thing, which he can't at Connecticut. And so he goes to the NBA because somebody's going to pick him anyway. Well, go ahead and pick him. And then if you turn him into a real player, somebody who really makes a difference, it'll be like the third time in the last 15 years that somebody has taken a guy with size but very little production and turned him into a player. And that's my point, is that guys who are underdeveloped or undeveloped, it doesn't happen at that level very often. It almost never happens. I mean, you look at the preps to pros years with Durant with Dwight Howard and LeBron and Kobe Bryant. And you can say, well, it happened for those guys. But guys who have actually played at a higher level, and first of all, that's a very select group of guys who actually did succeed. And then when you go into the era where we've had the 1 year, guys like I mentioned before, B.J. Mullins, average to below average college player, did not become a significant pro, has not become a significant pro, won't become a significant pro. Kosta Koufos, same deal. If you're not a really good college player, the odds of you becoming a really good pro are almost non-existent.
And, you know, as a coach, you're almost trapped because you don't want to derate or say anything bad about your player, even though you know they're not ready yet. And, of course, you know, you're caught between a rock and a hard place because you need to pump him up and just make sure everyone knows that you've got us back and he's a good player. It's like we're in this vicious cycle now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you get. You don't get much honesty. And you remember when Pete Carroll, a couple of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, when Mark Sanchez came out and said he was going to the NFL draft, and Pete Carroll said, I disagree with him, he's not ready. And I don't know whether he was right or wrong. I mean, Sanchez had done some things well as an NFL quarterback, some things not so well. So I don't know whether he was right or wrong, but he got killed. He got killed by his peers. He got killed by the media. I think it would be refreshing if Jim Calhoun came out and said, you know what, Andre, that's the dumbest thing you could ever do. You can't go to your left. You've got no jump hook. You can't make a shot. I think that would be great if somebody actually told the truth about one of these players instead of saying, oh, we support his decision to go reach his dreams. Well, you know what? Mm-hmm. If his dream is to just sit on the end of an NBA bench or, you know, play 20 minutes a night in the second quarter and when if the starter gets in foul trouble, if that's his dream, you know, I think we've got to adjust some dreams here, because this game used to be, you know, it used to be a great game. And it's a lesser game than it was 20 years ago. And I think that basketball may be the only sport, the only major sport that's getting worse as we go along. I think that's unacceptable. I don't think the sports, our athletes shouldn't be getting worse. They should be getting better. And because we're not training them right, they're getting worse.
Yep. Hey, we got a caller for you. Let's go to Saginaw. We got Michael on the line. Michael, how you doing?
How you doing there, Mike? Mike, I got a good question. Since you're talking about this topic, I just want you, Hasheem, the beef from Connecticut, and I'm JaVale McGee. And also, I'm getting worried about the Jackie Robinson's anniversary in baseball is past, and it's just like in college basketball, they hiring a bunch of retread coaches again. I just want you to opinion that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I don't understand the question.
What was the last question?
These college basketball kids like Larry Duchesne from Southern Mississippi to Connecticut and Keno Davis up here to Central Michigan. Why is so many colleges don't want to go out and try hire new coaches? Now, I mean, not just retread coaches who coach at a mid-major and they move them up to a major school. It's just, and also, since I said invoke Jackie Robinson, why is not like a lot of young black assistants are getting top jobs? I'd like to hear your opinion on that.
Well, I think, you know, we've gotten to the point in college basketball and the NBA where really surveying the landscape in terms of the numbers of minority coaches doesn't even really seem to be necessary anymore because there have been so many. And it got to the point, I think, in both the NBA and in college where people sort of stopped looking around and keeping count or whatever because it didn't seem necessary anymore. I mean, his point about Keno Davis or Bruce Weber or Larry Eustace, all true. But one could point to Paul Hewitt a year ago as saying they did the same thing with an African-American coach. Or, you know, he talked about African-American assistants not getting breaks on jobs, but I think we do see that in various places. So I think that, if it becomes a crisis again or a concern the way it is in college football, then I think he's right. But right now, I don't think that we have as big a problem as he thinks. I mean, and Hewitt's a perfect example of that. When Illinois went shopping for a coach, they went looking at a lot of different minority coaches before they settled on John Gross. They got turned down by a few of them.
Yes, they did.
They got turned down by Anthony Grant. They got turned down by Shaka Smart. I think they certainly made an earnest effort to try to get an African-American coach in at Illinois because it was something, you know, that their campus has not had a lot of.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, and the thing is, when we talk about all these, like we were talking about all the coaches that are, you know, once they get a chance to prove themselves or they get a kid who is really an exceptional player for a college player, not an exceptional player for the next level, but they all think, and that's the problem, Mike, all these kids think that they can play at the next level. No matter where they're at in their game, they feel they're so confident in their ability that they're ready for the next level.
Yeah, I think that's true. And before we move on, or back to the Mississippi State hired an African-American assistant coach and gave him a major job. And so the last two coaches hired in the SEC, counting Johnny Jones at LSU, both African-American. So I don't think we have a crisis in that department at all in college basketball. And I would imagine, I haven't done the numbers on the NBA, but I don't think that's a problem at the NBA level either. Basketball has been one sport. Now, you know, I talked about the things that bother me about the decline of the players, but from a progressive standpoint in terms of minority hiring and that sort of thing, I don't think we've seen that problem in college or pro basketball at all.
No, I would agree with you. I don't think we have a problem in that area. But, yeah, just the other areas, I just feel so sad with these kids. They just think they're, of course we'd like to see them go to college, but we know that's not a reality anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of playing 4 years, I mean, we're talking about, it's been 40 years. I mean, my entire adult life has basically been lived under early entry or the hardship rule or whatever you want to call it. So I don't, you know, the fantasy of the four-year player is a 1950s fantasy. I'm not worried about that. I'm not even worried. I'm worried about guys going to the league when they're ready to go. That's all I want. I want to see guys go when they're ready to go. And back when I was, and really it all started with the rookie salary cap rule. That was the worst thing that ever happened to basketball. Because at that point, what happened was Glenn Robinson got like $80 million or $70 million. And Penny Hardaway got like 40 or 50 and Jason Kidd got like 40 or 50, and everybody thought it was so horrible. And here's the thing. They all were worth it. Mm-hmm. They were all worth it. They were more worth it than the And a lot of the 1, 2, and or a lot of the 2, 3, and 4 players are worth the $7 or $8 million they're getting now. That they think they've got cost certainty, but what they wound up with was a lot of players who aren't ready to play. When it was a $40 or $50 or $60 million investment, the NBA wasn't just saying, "Well, maybe he'll turn into a player." I mean, they only took guys they knew were going to be great. Chris Webber at number one, and Penny Hardaway at number three, and Jason Kidd at number two, and Grant Hill. You know, those guys all turned out to be NBA stars, and that's something you don't see now.
Right.
You go past the first two picks in this draft, and that's just in my estimation, Anthony Davis and Thomas Robinson. A lot of people might not pick Thomas Robinson number two, but you go past the first two picks, and you tell me what's a sure thing. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, a great talent, plays with incredible energy, but his offense is so hit or miss. I mean, is he going to be an all-star in the NBA? Well, when Jason Kidd was selected with the second pick in 94, I believe it was, I didn't have any doubts about him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we definitely have a lot of doubts about these players today, that's for sure. Sometimes they give me a headache looking through them. Hey, Mike, I want to thank you. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and it's good talking about that. And we'll have to have you back on again sometime to talk about the guys and hopefully, because I know you read one where one of the players said he made a horrendous mistake because he left early for the pros. And it'd be nice if more guys would realize and wake up and smell the coffee and realize, hey, another year of college isn't going to hurt me. It gives me another year to get better, but so many guys don't look at it that way.
Well, you hear the mythology persist through the media, and a lot of coaches say the same nonsense, and it gets me angry when I hear coaches say that, because the really good players don't get hurt by going back. It didn't hurt Tyler Hansbrough to play 4 years at North Carolina. He went higher than anybody ever thought he would. He went 13th in the 2009 draft. Nobody had ever thought he was going to go that high. And no one said, well, he's been here 4 years and he's 23 years old or whatever he was. They thought he was a player and they took him. They thought he could make them better. Roy Hibbert got criticized a ton for going back to college. And now he's one of the better centers in the NBA. I never wavered from my belief in Roy Hibbert because I knew he could play. And that's the thing. You get all this nonsense that goes on in the draft. I think the dumb scouts talk more. And I think that's the problem, because the dumb scouts talk more and reporters listen to them, and then they repeat the nonsense they hear from the dumb scouts, while the smart scouts, the guys down in San Antonio, places like that, they just keep drafting great players and winning games.
Yep, and that's the thing. That's what you need to do, just draft good players and win games. Hey, Mike, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. I will call you again, and we'll come back, and we'll do this again sometime, buddy.
Sounds good, Earl. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News and from the BTN, the Big Ten Network, talking basketball with us right here on AM 870. The time, 24 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870. WKAR.
11 Secret Service agents placed on leave after allegations of misconduct involving prostitutes in Colombia. But this is hardly the first scandal where the best of the best embarrassed their boss, the president, and the American people. I'm Neil Conan, Elites, Entitlement, and Power. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. Mostly sunny skies and a high of 56. Partly cloudy with some patchy frost overnight tonight, lows in the mid-30s. Partly sunny for Wednesday with some patchy frost early in the morning, upper 60s for the high, and mostly cloudy with a chance of rain on Thursday, highs in the mid-60s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, tonight is the night. I know most of you know, it's game four tonight between the Red Wings and the Nashville Predators. And right now, Nashville is up 2-1 over the Red Wings, and they're going into game four tonight. But we'll talk about that a little later. Let's go to the phones, and we've got Dennis on the line. Dennis, how you doing?
Good, Earl. How you doing?
Okay.
Hey, I heard the tail end of your conversation just as Mike from Saginaw is finishing up his question. So maybe I heard the conversation subsequent to that out of context, but I've got to take issue with both positions of your guest and yours, Earl, starting with the wisdom of young men, or women for that matter, staying in college for 4 years or 3 years and maximizing the time that they develop at the college level before they attempt to take the leap into the pros. Again, and I've been saying this for years, if the apparatus wasn't so constricted and constructed in a way that it compelled young people to go to college, whether they're interested in going to college or not, I think you'd have an argument. But, you know, the way it is now, I don't hear anybody advocating for, you know, a 5'3", 150-pound kid with a 36-inch waist who can't play any sport. I don't hear anyone advocating for him to go to college for 4 years. So why, just because a kid can throw a ball in the hoop or run it up and down a grass field real fast, why is it all of a sudden so important that he pursue an education? We don't seem as a society to deem it important that everyone get an opportunity at a quality education. But if they can play a sport and bring a lot of money to the university coffers and the NCAA's coffers, all of a sudden we want them there for as long as we can get them there. My opinion, Earl, is we ought to have an apparatus in place for those people who aren't interested in college, who are only interested in developing their skills so they can become a professional at the highest level, NBA, NFL, and make money while they're doing it. We ought to have an apparatus in place for those people, and those who want to go to college should be able then to go to college and play for free, just like Derek Jeter had the opportunity to go to Michigan, but he turned it down to become a Yankee, or any number of college hockey players who say, okay, I'll go to college, I'll play for Michigan, I'll play for Michigan State instead of going to the minor leagues. I'll eschew that money for now because I want the college experience or the degree, and choose that opportunity. I don't hear people advocating the other way around, and it perplexes me, Earl. Why don't you advocate for either universal opportunity for all young people to go to college for free, or set up an apparatus for those who aren't interested in going to college, but they're compelled to because they want to become a pro athlete?
Well, you know, the thing is, everyone, if they want to go, they can go. You know, of course, we know if you don't have any skills, no colleges would want you. So, you know, we know that's for sure. But if you want to go, you can go. And if you do go, you know, you have a chance to improve your skill set and get better. And, of course, yes, and make some money down the line.
Why do they have to make it down the line? Why can't they make it tomorrow, right now?
Because
just
they
like
don't.
They could if they were a baseball player or a hockey player or a golf or a tennis player.
Because they're not ready right now. For most of them, even the hockey and tennis players, as you know, none of them go out there and make money, a lot of money instantly. It takes some growth. It takes time.
But
you know, all of them takes time.
Right? Hmm? They can go pro and they can make it right now. If you found out tomorrow that some kid was getting $600 a month under the table at good old A&M University, it would be a scandal. But if he's making $600 to $1,200 a month playing for the Lansing Lugnuts, we're looking at him, okay, he wants to be a pro baseball player, and there's no scandal. Can't you concede that it's a cartel that's exploiting these people, taking their earning power and putting it in their own pockets by the billions, and at the university level by the millions, and giving them pennies on the dollars in terms of books and tuition and housing and food that they may not be interested in, but they only take because they have no choice?
Some of them are that good, but as you know, a lot of them aren't that good. You know, a lot of them have getting a scholarship, even though they don't even really deserve a scholarship. But there are a lot of them on scholarship who really probably have no business even being on scholarship. It goes both ways, Dennis.
Well, Earl, you're missing the point. If they're good enough to get a scholarship, that means they have some type of tangible value, right?
They've got some potential.
No, they have value right now. If they have value enough to get a scholarship, if somebody's willing to give them something that they wouldn't give any other member of society, a quote-unquote, not say that in quotation marks because we know it's not free. They work damn hard for that money. But if someone's willing to give them a college education and food and books and tuition, everything that goes with that, there's value. There's tangible market value in that right there. That's something that other children pay tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars willingly to attain. They're getting that quote-unquote free. Well, all I'm saying is, instead of giving them just that one avenue of pursuit, college, why don't we give them a choice? Why doesn't the NFL or in the NBA set up a true minor league system and give these players an option? We both know the answer, because they don't want to take away the pipeline that's free to them, that's set up in a way that makes other their cronies, their partners in crime, millions and billions of dollars, CBS, ESPN, ABC, the NCAA, all the universities and the conferences, millions upon millions of dollars, and the kids are ostracized if they say, well, I don't want to participate in this. I want to leave here as soon as possible and go pro. I look at it as the peak of hypocrisy, Earl, and it perplexes me you don't get it. But I'll leave that alone, because we'll just go around and around about this. And the other thing, I'll just say this real briefly, the idea that we have a minority of black coaches in the NBA and the NCAA is perceived as somehow solving the problem, again, I think is ridiculous. If you had black coaches in the NBA and the NCAA commensurate to the number of black players percentage-wise, then I think you would solve the problem. I don't see a whole hell of a lot of black coaches in the National Hockey League, and I don't see a whole hell of a lot of black coaches in the Major League, because you don't have that many black players. Mm-hmm. But the idea that you have a majority population of white coaches at the NBA and the NCAA level, we find that acceptable because, well, it's better than it used to be. To me, we're whistling past the cemetery. We're ignoring the argument. There is still discrimination, and you can see it right there on the bench. Every team you see has black assistant coaches because they need them to recruit. But when it comes to the guy at the top of the pyramid, we'll limit that. We'll give a lot of people opportunities, but it's still not where it would be if it was based on the merit. So I'll leave it at that, Earl. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. The time, 32 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk. Give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, we started to talk about the Nashville Predators and the Detroit Red Wings. They take place tonight, Game 4. The question is, all the games have been 3-2 to this point. Can the Wings tie it up tonight, or will they trail 3-1? And if they trail and fall behind 3-1, will this almost be the end for them, or can they somehow get back in the series? It's been a tough series, played a pretty well played series during the first three games, but the Wings just haven't been up to snuff, right? They've done a lot of things trying to get back into the game, and they'll be trying tonight. I know a lot of people will be interested, be looking at this game and what they can do. They almost were tied last. You all probably saw the goal that was not allowed, and that's one thing. I've always had a problem with a shot like that. You know, the shot was off, so should the shot still count even though the time expired? Because he got the shot off before time expired, and then it went across the net, with just before 1 second left. Should that shot have counted? That's what I just would like to know. Do you anybody think that shot should count? If you got the shot off before it's like in the NBA, or you get the shot off before the buzzer or the whistle sounds, the shot counts. But in hockey, if you get the shot off, it doesn't count. If everything goes off, the sound goes off, it just doesn't count. So should it count? So let's ask our good friend over there, Aaron Young. Aaron, should it count a shot like that? Should it count, or should it count be just because is it good enough that you got the shot off, or should it count the other way around?
Well, let's just have it count that one time, and we'll say it was good. That's actually – I've never actually even thought about that. That's actually a pretty interesting question. I think you have to look – it can't be the same as the NBA and that kind of thing, just because, obviously in the NBA, when you shoot it in the air, the odds of someone jumping up 20 feet in the air is probably pretty slim. But In hockey, though, there's so many deflections. So let's just use the Red Wings as an example from the other day. You know, if it would have been deflected or something rather another, does it still count? I guess maybe those are the things. Because if a Lindstrom or someone shoots it from the blue line and someone else deflects it, or they grab it and then they shoot it again, maybe they purposely deflected it, or there's, I guess maybe those are the things you would have to work out if you were going to apply this rule. But that's actually pretty interesting. I don't think that would probably ever happen. Do I think it would add some suspense to the game? I think it would. Obviously, with Detroit, they've got pucks in just past the in the goal, just within tenths of a second beforehand. So it definitely would have been cool, actually, if that rule would have been applied. So as a final decision, I'm going to say yes. I think that would be really add something to the game, just because I think it would make it more interesting. However, I would be curious to see how they would actually implement all the little, if someone deflects it, you know, all those kind of things.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see if they could do it. It probably won't be changed, but it's interesting to think about, you know, if something like that could happen.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you're right. The odds of that ever happening are probably pretty slim, maybe 2050, I don't know. Yeah, it would be interesting to see. NHL obviously has made some changes in the past. That's a possibility. But like I said, I just think that that's probably one that probably won't happen, just for the fact that obviously you have the puck, and the way it travels, obviously on the ice, it can touch other players on the way, unlike the NBA. I just don't think it's ever going to happen. Do I wish? Yeah.
It'd be nice if it did, but as we know, some things just aren't meant to be, but there are a few that are meant to be. And who knows? It could happen. I guess we can be optimistic about that. It could happen. Well, we know coming up later on today, Kentucky College Basketball Players of the Year. He's leaving school after just one season and making himself available for the June draft. And that's Anthony Davis. He's expected to join four other underclassmen from the Wildcats, the NCAA championship team. So, all of those guys aren't starters, but they're all trying to reach their dream. So hopefully, you know, they'll reach it, you know, if they go, or else they'll be saying, gee, I should have stayed one more year in school. Should have stayed one more year in college. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see what happens with them, and or they end up in the NBDL. A lot of them will end up that way in the minor leagues. I mean, nobody thinks they're going to end up in the minor leagues. They all think they're going to end up as a big star in the NBA. But we know reality states, not all of them, that's going to happen to all of them. They might get on a roster. They may have to struggle. They may have to learn a lot to get on a roster. Because they're plain and simply, so many of them just aren't ready. You can try. I mean, you know, you can try, and I guess that's all you can say. You've got a right to try, and you can give it a try. You know, maybe you'll make it, maybe you won't, and some will, as we know. There's got probably good two or three players that will probably make it a big or become a significant contributor, and there'll be a lot of players who will make it out on a roster and just be an end of the bench player. They'll probably play 5 or 6 minutes a game or something like that. How do you see about these young players going off into the pros? You know, how good their chances are, Jacob? Or Aaron?
I just don't have a lot of respect for it. I know it's the way the system is set up, so they were forced to obviously go to college. You know, obviously we all knew they were going to they're going to enter the draft. So the fact that the NBA even has this 1 year, you know, the players, whatever the system, how the system is, whoever sets these rules, the fact that there's even a 1 year rule limit, I mean, let's be honest, it doesn't really do anything for anyone. Besides, obviously, it won a championship for Kentucky. But, you know, Davis, he's out of all of them, he's probably the one that I think has the best chance. However, he's got to work on his strength. Obviously, we know he's very talented. He's very tall, so that favors him right away. But he's really got to work on his strength, because frankly, there's a lot of guys in the NBA that are going to be able to just push him around. But it helps that he's, I think he's one of those guys that can really for the fact of his height and his athleticism for his height, he can be. But the other guys, like you said, you might just throw up your arms and you're just like, well, we'll see what happens. But the fact that, you know, kind of going back to just one and done kind of deal, I don't have a lot of respect for it. I understand that's how the system is. I understand this is their dream to play in the NBA. But as you alluded to earlier, and as our guest alluded to earlier, a lot of them think that they're going to be they're all very great because everyone's telling them that. But the reality is that only so many do become great players. Like you said, a lot of them might end up on the minor leagues or just be sitting on the bench. Collecting their paycheck. If that's what they want to do, that's fine. But we all know that's not what they expect to be doing. Sometimes for certain players, it works. They get on the right team with the right system, and it works out for them. But unfortunately, for a lot of them, it doesn't. I'd be curious to know how many players, I don't know, we could just take the last 20 years, how many players there's actually been in the NBA total. And I'm sure, and how many names we actually remember out of those, out of that total. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of players that probably went, we all know that went early out of college and all that good stuff. So obviously I know 20 years ago the system was a little different, so maybe not go back that far. But I just don't have a lot of respect for the one. I understand that's how the system is, but I don't know. I just don't. You know, they just go to college just to, well, I got to do it, so you're going to make me do it. I won a championship just because, you know, there's a ton of guys together. They worked hard. Don't get me wrong. They worked hard. They deserved it. But well, I guess we'll see how their NBA career turns out. Hopefully for the best for all of them. We never want to wish bad luck on anyone. But unfortunately, I think a few of them probably just isn't going to pan out like they wish it will.
Oh, yeah, we have that every year. We have some who don't pan out, who you know, they really and sincerely think they're ready to play and they're good enough to play. And unfortunately, so many of them aren't ready to play. The time, 42 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
The drones that changed warfare in Iraq and Afghanistan patrol more and more American skies, and everybody wants them, from farmers who want to monitor crops to police departments who want to track criminals on the run. Critics, though, worry about safety and privacy violations. I'm Neil Conan, domestic drones, plus the silly games we play. Angry Birds, anyone? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
The forecast for the rest of the day, mostly sunny skies and a high around 56. For tonight, partly cloudy with patchy frost overnight, a low in the mid-30s. Then partly sunny for Wednesday with patchy frost early in the morning, highs in the upper 60s. Mostly cloudy Thursday with a chance of rain and a high in the mid-60s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527. Toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Well, the Detroit Tigers and Justin Verlander got a win last night, 3-2 over the Kansas City Chiefs. Good win for Justin last night as he came through and got a win. He lost the one prior to that, but got a no decision prior to that. But it was good win for him. Good that he stayed with it. He's coming back. He's such a strong pitcher. But, you know, I'm looking at the rest of that staff, and all they've got is Justin Verlander and a lot of maybes, question marks, or guys who can come and play, sometimes play well, and then some other times they don't play well. We see a lot of that. Well, let's go back to the phones. We've got Eugene in East Lansing. Eugene, how you doing?
Hey, Errol. Since we're on the subject about NBA, I got a question that's always been on my mind. When did the favoritism start happening for NBA superstars, where they allowed to get the extra step or not get that foul called on them? Do you know when that started taking place?
I don't know. It's one of those things that you're talking about the NBA players that they are about college players. So they don't
NBA players.
Yeah, they, you know, it started. I know it was happening even before Jordan. So I know Jordan had really got it. you know, because the theory is you don't want your superstars to fall out of the game, you know, and that's the thing. You people pay a lot of money for a game, $7,500 a game, and you don't go to a game to see a player foul out. So,
okay.
You know, so Michael Jordan couldn't foul out. Some of the other players, most of the big time players don't foul out. I think Jordan fouled out of one game in his entire career. I think Magic fouled out of maybe once or twice in his entire career. So, you know, they're not going to let the superstars foul out because that's who you pay your money to see. You don't pay to see the other four or five also rants. You come to see the superstars.
Okay, I got another question. I thought the college basketball is going to change that rule about the you know, when they change possession, when the defense does a good play or tying up the ball.
Oh yeah,
but it seemed like they didn't change that rule.
No, they haven't. I don't know if they are. I haven't heard much talk about them changing it. It might not happen. I mean, you know, it's the John Wooden rule where, you know, the alternate possession rule is how we have it now. And I'm not sure. I would like to see it change. And the team who works the hardest and does the most gets the ball in return. You know, if you were the one who caused or initiated that interaction and got the ball or stole the ball from someone.
Exactly.
I would like to see that, but I don't know if we ever will. I mean,
yeah, because it just makes it seem, I just think it's always making, no matter what, it was against my team or what, I think it was a team that defense does good, they should be rewarded for it.
Exactly. That's why I feel they should be rewarded for it. But as we know, right now it's not, and who knows if that's going to change.
All right, Earl. Thanks a lot, man.
Hey, thank you, buddy. Yeah, bye-bye. Yeah, that's the thing. So many rules out there. Some of them do deserve to be changed or should be changed. I mean, I know that, you know, Jordan really probably got going during the Jordan era. I mean, there were times, there were players that didn't foul out before then who were very good players. And sometimes those very good players, you know, they know that they can get away with a little bit more stuff. They're able to get away with a lot more things, you know, especially like guys like Jordan and them and the other guys too. Some of the other, if you're considered a superstar, you can get away with murder almost. You get away with a lot of things in basketball if you're considered a superstar in the league. And, you know, you can't go out there and just call it and just be one of the guys. You know, you really do have to be something special. If you're something special, you can get away with it. I mean, Elgin Baylor didn't hardly get fouled out any games. He got, you know, very very few superstars in any sport. If you go to any sports, in any games, do superstars foul out or get into serious foul trouble in basketball or baseball or football? You know, you don't hear about that. Well, let's go over to Eagle right now and talk with Bob. Bob, how you doing?
Hello there, Earl.
Howdy.
Been busy and so on. I haven't had a chance to call in today. I was driving, and your last caller prompts me to make my annual point for rule change, and that is the calling the timeouts. I just hate to see
a
defensive player make a good stop, a good play, and the offensive guy just calls a timeout and he's flying out of bounds and all that kind of thing. So I still, you ought to have to be in the position to advance the ball.
Right. I can agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, it would be nice if they did, but boy, you know, you can get away with things like that of falling out of bounds, and as long as you get your hand out of the ball or something like that, you know, it would work. But yes, they've got so many rule changes that. The thing is, so many rules are designed to make the game easier, to make it simpler. They don't make rules hardly anymore to make the game tougher to play or to make a change.
The tie-up, you know, at the end of the game, there isn't time to worry about the possession. Next possession, you get it back. But you've got a little bit of time left. Defensive guy makes a stop. He's got the guy tied up. Instead of getting rewarded for it, offensive team says got the possession, or else they get the ball and they run the clock out.
Yeah, that happens. It's
got to make again, those simple words, you must be able to advance the ball before you can call a timeout.
Yep.
Okay, push for it, Earl.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot. Hey, thanks, Bob. Yeah. Give us a call. Talk a little sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, the jury selection is beginning for Roger Clemens. And I don't know if Roger Clemens is definitely guilty or not. I mean, you know, a lot of us think that he's probably guilty, and he's going to get another shot. He's going to get retried. So I'm sort of wondering how that's going to turn out. How is this Roger Clemens retrial going to go? I mean, he was a very good pitcher in the day. Those rumors around him about him using steroids are very strong. So, you know, we're not saying that he did or he didn't, but it was very, very strong about the rumors that he had. And then I don't know if you read it or saw this, but an Alabama fan broke the Crystal Trophy. He was watching it, and he accidentally knocked it off a display, and this displayed by a father of an unidentified current player who lost it, who dropped it, knocked it off the stand. So that can happen. I guess that can happen. That's for sure. Well, coming up later on today, you'll be able to get the NFL schedule. You're supposed to be released at 7 o'clock today, the schedule of the NFL. So you can see that tonight, and, you know, you can get a little peek on the NFL schedule coming up this year. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on AM 870 WKAR. And Aaron, we've seen so many things, and we had a lot of interesting and very good conversation today. You know, from the basketball players and to some of the other things. And I've always been one, you know, especially in the sport of basketball, I've noticed it seems like the superstars can get away with so many things. They don't have to, you know, they get six fouls, they can do a lot of other things, but it just seems like they get away with murder at sometimes.
That's kind of obvious there, especially nowadays. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, with the way media is covered, or the way media covers it, the sport, you know, that's like you said earlier, that's who people come to, that's what they pay to come see, is those superstars. If you take them out of the game, there's a good chance they might even leave. So, and if they leave, they're not bringing money into the arena, they're not bringing money into the sport. So it doesn't do the NBA any good to have those superstars go out. I mean, if Kobe was, you know, following out like once a month or twice a month, three times a month, whatever, that would, you know, the NBA, yeah, I'm sure would come up with, hey, how can we keep him on the court so he can have better TV ratings, so we can bring in more money, so we can push more advertising and this and that. And, you know, it's all about money, and superstars bringing money. It's as simple as that. Is that going to change? Absolutely not. Is it going to get worse? I don't know if it's going to get any worse. That's hard to say. But in its current state, that's how it is. We have to accept it. There's nothing you can do about it. Unless you're the one running the NBA, you can't do nothing about it. Is it a good thing? No. But it is what it is, and we move on.
Yes, because they're all these games have certain quirks in their rules. And, you know, we can follow them. We can look at, I mean, and, you know, how much pressure, I wonder how much pressure is it on the referees? Do they, you know, they have to make the right calls all the time, or can they look away sometime and miss some of those calls?
Oh, I think they can look away. Unfortunately, though, nowadays they're under a microscope because they have 800 different cameras from every single angle. So they can always, you know, I think it was last night, Delonte West, I think, gave someone a wet willy or something like that. And the refs completely missed it. And the commentators were like, how do the refs miss this? There's three of them on the court. And I'm not saying that that's one thing that they looked away from, but, you know, it is difficult for the refs because I'm sure in their meetings and stuff, they're like, well, tonight we got so-and-so as a superstar, mm-hmm, so maybe not, you know, let things go, let some of the contact go and that kind of thing. So I'm sure it's difficult, but at the end of the day, people don't really come to watch the refs, so someone might write a story on it, someone might comment on it, but a couple days later, people forget, and they're back to another game, and life goes on for the refs, and that's about it. So at certain times, it's difficult for them, but in reality, I think most people just kind of forget that the refs are even there and they move on to the next game.
You know, Aaron, I'm starting to see, or at least in the last, probably about the last 5 to 10 years in college sports, you know, referees, you know, I always thought that referees do a good job in college sports, in basketball and in football and things like that. But now I start seeing, like, especially when we get to the championship game or like in the Final Four, you don't get as many calls. You know, you're getting a lot less calls. And oh, the announcers have to say, well, it's just a very clean play game. But I think it's the college sports are now, it's seeping out down where they won't make the calls that should be made.
Right, exactly. And why the reasoning is, I really don't know. I think they just want to let the game happen, make it seem more of a natural kind of this is how the game is played. But unfortunately, if you're going to call it that way, then you should be calling it that way the entire season. You shouldn't be inconsistent, which we all know a lot of times. Unfortunately, games are called so inconsistently, sometimes even within its own game. Sometimes the first half, one team will be called for a bazillion fouls. Next half, it's the opposite. The other team will be called. And you can clearly see just by looking at the numbers, you know, that happens. I think Ohio State had a game. I don't know if it was during the tournament or the 64-team tournament or if it was just in the regular season. I think it was during the tournament. My friend and I calculated a foul was called almost every single minute of the game because I think they had – I don't know who they were playing, but they had so many foul calls for both sides, and it was just a joke on the on the refs that they were calling that many fouls. I mean, a foul almost every minute during a 40-minute game. I mean, that's a little much there. So, it's you know, life goes on. It is what it is. I think things will change here and there a little bit, but things will probably just it's going to be what it is.
Yeah, it'll probably stay the same. Yeah, because we don't see much movement for foul changes and radical changes in the games because people like the game. They like to basically watch it for what it is and how hopefully how good it is and people can live with that. I don't if they can't live with it then there might be some changes somewhere down the line.
Yeah, and I look at it this way too, as if every single game, let's take it this way, if every single game was called perfectly and no one had any fuss about it and they just said, man, that was a perfectly called game, which obviously will never happen, that doesn't bring a lot of attention to maybe a forum or an article about something. It doesn't bring people, it doesn't bring up controversy, it doesn't bring up conversation about certain things, which, you know, if people are having conversations online or on the phone or on a talk show like this about certain things like that, that's not bringing in money. So, you know, it's actually, maybe I'm stretching it here, but sometimes I believe that certain things are done a certain way. That way there is controversy because people love controversy, love to talk about it. It brings in money for certain things. And so it makes for good talk. That's just how it is. And I think it's going to, like you said, I think it's going to continue that way.
You know, Jacob, I also I wonder, I mean, Aaron, excuse me, I got both names over here. But I also wonder, do we, you know, we have all these games that we're watching and we're following, and sometimes, you know, as we see the artists or the players out there, you know, they're wondering too, what can I do to improve my play and improve the game? What can be done to improve the game and what can be done to improve the officiating? We always have those issues. We're always talking about officiating at some time and the games at others. And so maybe one day we'll get into it in depth on how anything or how things can definitely be changed. Hey, we want to thank you all for listening and thank you all for calling. We invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up, talk sports with us right here on WKAR. Remember to give us a call, listen to us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We want you to have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and I'll see you tomorrow right here on Michigan State University, AM 870 WKAR, East Lansing.
From NPR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.